Hey, Vinny.
Hey Tyler, how you doing?
I think it's time for another interview, and it's good to have all the boys back. Let's get into it.
High drive into right back at the wall.
Swung on a joke into right field. There it goes. See ya.
First hit of the year.
He drives one deep left field. That goes up to back near the wall. It's out of here.
Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, folks. Welcome to episode 80 of the Big Fly Pod with your co-host, Vinny D'Amato and T. Lou. We have a very special guest today here, folks. We're excited to have another interview, as it's been a little bit since we've had some other folks on. So we're really excited to welcome to the podcast Thomas Nestico. He is from TJ Stats on X. He basically is one of these unbelievable resources when it comes to all things analytics, when it comes to the world of baseball. You can follow his stuff all on X along with Patreon. And he is going to show things from pitching reports to the best stuff in the game from some of the best arms that we get to see on our TVs every single night. But Thomas, thank you so much for taking the time out of your busy schedule to join us here today.
Yeah, thanks for having me on, guys.
Absolutely. And Thomas, we're going to talk about a boatload of things during this episode, and I think what's most important for folks to listen to is just the understanding of what you're providing and also to how it can be of value to them, you know, in all things, whether that's, you know, fantasy baseball, whether that's just the love of the game or just watching it and understanding baseball on a higher scale is what we're looking to do. And so why don't we just first just go right into it and just touch on what is your background and how did your background and also to probably your love for baseball create TJ Stats?
Yeah. So I'm a civil engineer by trade. So I've grown up always loving maths and the sciences, but I've also had a passion for sports. Growing up, I'm from Toronto. I've watched many Blue Jays games, many Leafs games, a lot of heartbreak, but that's the way it goes when you're a sports fan. But yeah, I've just been a huge fan of sports and maths and sciences, kind of wanted to blend those two together and build upon that and create my platform, TJ Stats, on Twitter, and just throughout my schooling and my own, I guess, hobbies and whatnot, kind of learn more about programming, statistics, and even more about the sport of baseball in general. Because again, there's so much detail and depth and so much data available when looking at the sport. And it's just really cool to just dig in and even discuss with other people within the scene and even players as well, just the way that they discuss and kind of bridging that gap between like fans and players and kind of like showing how analytics can be used effectively and positively in, I guess, all aspects of life, but it's very applicable in terms of sports and baseball specifically.
Very cool. I'm genuinely just curious, was there ever a starting point or how did, because you obviously run TJ Stats and it's successful, right? What kind of kickstarted that? I know you love math and science and sports and kind of the blend, but that can mean a lot of different things for a lot of different people, right? And some people go to work for organizations, but you kind of started your own thing, you know, your page. What was kind of the jump start there, or was there one? Was it a slow burn? Can you walk us through kind of the starting phase for you?
Yeah, I definitely maybe 5-6 years ago, I started like digging more deep into actually fantasy hockey. So that's kind of where I got my start here. So if you look at my earlier work on my Twitter page, you'll see a lot more hockey content, kind of straying away, focusing more on baseball now. I feel more passionate about it. And just the data is more accessible. I'll share some hockey content here and there, but I definitely started with hockey and then also with, especially fantasy sports, kind of applying knowledge to help, I guess, myself win the leagues I was in and get like a step ahead of my competitors. My current page, I'm not too focused on giving fantasy content. Like, I'll happily provide it if someone asks, but I'm more looking at baseball as a whole, kind of, again, helping people understand and learn more about the game of baseball and analytics and kind of making them a bit more comfortable with the term. Because I know there's definitely some some people in the industry, fans in general, aren't too aware what analytics is and how powerful they can actually be.
Yeah, that's one of the discussion points that we'll have here in a little bit, because analytics has really taken off to another level. And there's terms almost every single day that are starting to come out that I think a lot of people have questions about and wondering, is this, you know, the number that I should follow? And should I recognize this as the stat that I should use for picking this player, or, you know, maybe where I see my current favorite team playing? So, you know, you talk about building all this up. Who in the industry do you look up to, or maybe not look up to, maybe follow, and how did that come about and why?
Yeah, so I've definitely gained a lot of popularity through my TJ Stuff Plus model, which was definitely very influenced by Enoceris and his Stuff Plus model. Mm-hmm. I'm reading through his articles, his documentation, all on it, and kind of learning more about baseball. Especially in the pitching side, I feel that's very applicable there. Lance Brzdowski, I've had plenty of discussions with him. You would know him well. He covers the Cubs, Marquee Sports, and he's fascinating to talk to. His knowledge is amazing. It's immense. The way he explains things and presents them is fantastic. There's definitely a bunch of other guys. There's Kyle Bland with Picture List. He's very, again, he's at the forefront. His visuals are phenomenal, and just everything he does is in depth. There are so many people around the industry. There's Pitch Profiler. He runs his own kind of pitch modeling site as well. It's kind of picked up recently as well. I'm very, very happy how he's going there. But again, there's just so many people, different names. Definitely flowing through my mind right now. Can't remember them, but yeah, there's everyone I follow. I enjoy their work immensely, and again, as you mentioned, it's just everywhere now, and there's so many brilliant minds working on it and trying to better the game and make it more accessible for everyone.
Yeah, that was always fascinating. We brought on, if you know, Ariel Cohen not too long ago, maybe a couple months ago now, and he was the first person that I had sat down and talked about, you know, the aspect of having your own model. And he said he kind of made his own model, and it sounds like you have one as well. And that was always so fascinating to me. Like, you kind of just sit down and start from scratch. Okay, what's important? How much am I going to value certain things, and how much weight do I put on those? That's always super fascinating to me. So obviously you can't give away your secrets. We won't dive in too much into how you make your model and stuff like that. But there is a question here too that I've been kind of pondering since we talked about doing this episode, and Ty brought it up too. Do you see analytics or how much of a benefit do you see it being versus, you know, there's a lot of people who maybe think the game is to focusing too much on them, right? You can nitpick stats and you know, which ones are important, blah, blah, blah. Is there a point where it gets detrimental to have too many stats and you almost kind of lose maybe the sense of the game itself, or the purity or the love, enjoyment, or maybe the numbers are the enjoyment? Where do you kind of draw that line as to, you know, I love sports, but I love numbers? Or is it just kind of a beautiful combination that, you know, people, I think, maybe think too much about? So kind of curious on what your thoughts are there as to, you know, the benefit as versus like a detriment to the game
or games. I've always advocated for kind of a mix between analytics and the eye test, because again, we're not watching a computer simulation, we're watching real humans play. They have their feelings, how they're like, how they work, because the computer, the analytics can't tell us how a picture is feeling, or even more stuff like that. Maybe like even just looking at a picture, you can see if they're off or not. So definitely want that blend. I do think that sometimes there is an overload of analytics, and somewhat to the point where people are kind of misusing them, maybe to like spread their own narratives. I've definitely seen people use metrics in that way, but also in ways where maybe they don't fully understand what it's going through. And again, with so much new stuff coming out, something like the bat speed data just released, maybe we can see, oh, bigger number better, but also we have to kind of contextualize that and see, oh, this batter swings this hard, how does this impact the rest of his approach, the rest of his game? Mm-hmm. So again, I think analytics is definitely will enhance the game of baseball. I don't think it at any point it will be detrimental. There's definitely people that don't really like the inclusion of it. They want to leave it as it's just a sport. We want to get these numbers out of here. But in the end, analytics is making the game better. The development of players has excelled immensely in recent years, specifically pitching. But again, mixing that blend between the eye test, coaching, and the players themselves and the metrics, because again, not everyone understands what the numbers are really trying to say or what the statistics are. And think of a player, you go tell them your barrel rate is this, they're like, okay, what does this actually mean? But they know intuitively that, oh, I'm just hitting the ball hard and lifting it more. So that's, again, like they can kind of understand that. But like when you go give just a bunch of other numbers to just fans and whatnot, they might not understand what they should be looking for and how to use them properly. But again, overall, analytics is enhancing baseball. And again, meshing them with the eye test will definitely pretty much always be the way to go.
Yeah. And thank you for all that, because I think in, you know, Vinny and I grew up playing baseball. I'm guessing you did as well. And you love the game for what it is. And you kind of don't really understand all those numbers if you're just out there playing. I remember growing up, I never really cared about certain numbers until I got told by a college scout that I had to have this number in order to be at this level. And it was like, well, what if I understand the game better than this guy who hits the ball 5 miles per hour harder? And so I think, like, from an organization standpoint, I know certain organizations use analytics on a higher scale. We saw with the whole New York Yankees and how many people were in their analytics department in comparison to other departments like the Rays. And, you know, that whole argument, is that beneficial? Is that not? It's about a winning ball club. And so I love your answer there, because I think a lot of people could, you know, see what you put out there and say, oh, he only cares about the numbers. No, you're making a clear point of this is truly a well-round balance that is needed in the game today.
It's also fun to see too, like how teams construct these kind of balances between players. I mean, think about Moneyball or something, right? Like a island of misfit toys, to quote Jonah Hill. Obviously that wasn't Jonah Hill, but at the same time, right? How teams are able to build those, this guy gets on base. We want guys who get on base, like that thought process. How do teams take that to the next level? Because like you mentioned, Thomas, with all the pitchers, right? We see so many pitchers pop up kind of, whether it's out of nowhere or they've just been, these organizations have been doing deep dives. It's always fun to see kind of how they build teams out and what they value. I think about the Cubs, right? They really focused on an up the middle defense, right? Nico Horner, Dansby Swanson, obviously Cody Bellinger, like those were cornerstones when they thought about, okay, what do we want to accomplish? Well, we want a good defense, even at the risk of not having the best offense right now, but that's beside the point, right? It's just fun to see how they kind of build the teams and what works and what doesn't work. So that's something that we don't really think about either, right? We kind of take dives into individual players, and I'm curious, just, I mean, do you ever take into account, like, you know, team content or entire teams rather than just individual players? Or, because I know, you know, most people want the individual players, but is that something you ever kind of think about or explore while you're working?
And in terms of the pitching side, I guess the Cubs are actually a very good example of this. Okay. They don't really have any like power arms, at least in their starting rotation. But they have a philosophy for, I guess, contact suppression. You see with Javier Saad, Steele, and even Hendricks. Hendricks is the slowest throw in the league, and he's having a pretty decent year this year. But again, they're focusing more, less on like overpowering stuff and more on contact suppression. Because again, the game is so like it fluctuates so much, it's so fluid, that you can again look at another team like the Braves with someone like Fried. Fried has, again, doesn't have the most overpowering stuff, but he has a very deep arsenal which he commands well. And from there, he's been one of the most effective pitchers in the past few seasons. So again, team context is very important, because again, the way they approach development and whatnot, because then you can have teams like the Rays where sometimes their pitchers are just go all out all the time. Right. And we've seen that may not work out in the end, with last year, they've had, I think they had around 6 or 7 season ending injuries throughout the season. So again, team context is definitely very important because teams are definitely approaching and developing their players in a specific fashion. True. And maybe it's correct for that specific player and maybe it doesn't work for another one. But again, considering that is important, and the teams definitely have their own models. They're very deep analytical departments as well, like crunching these numbers and trying to understand how to better their team. And again, giving the data to scouts, pro player personnel, the coaches, and trying to, I guess, develop that further.
Absolutely. And, you know, before we get into, you know, some breakout candidates and talking about what you do strictly with TJ Stats on Twitter, which is where, or X, excuse me, where it really is one of the things that really caught my eye, which is your pitcher reports that you do. I think that it, and I mean this really no BS, it's one of the top analytical, I don't even know how to describe it, but pieces of information from an analytic standpoint that is so well defined, and you've done an incredible job of it. So that's what I really want to get to. But before I do that, where do you see TJ Stats going? And a reason I ask this is because of analytics popping off as much as it is. You don't have to share maybe some insider information as to where it might be going on a larger scale, but maybe just sharing some thoughts on where do you see this going for yourself, because it has been so successful thus far.
Yeah. So I just started this as a hobby 3-4 years ago. Again, focused strictly on hockey initially, but now it's kind of grown. I've become very popular. I get people mentioning me all the time. I want to see this picture. I want to see that picture. I even have some MLB college pitchers, free agent pitchers, message me asking for their, like, any data they have on them, or I can help them run some numbers. So that's really, really cool. Yeah. I kind of also, I guess, around maybe early 2023, maybe I can make this into a career, maybe work with the team or whatnot. So I definitely think that would definitely be something I would want to do in the future, work with a team. And no opportunity has come up yet for that. But again, I'm working as a civil engineer. I'm enjoying my work right now. So it's, again, I'm not really too desperate to move into the industry, especially with kind of the platform I have and sharing analytics, because I feel like if I move on to a baseball team, I guess I would definitely be less involved on Twitter and might have to just not share anything at all. So again, it's kind of that push and pull of, like, I like being in the community, sharing the work, helping other people understand, but also like working as my passion, something I really want to look at and maybe work with the team in the future. But again, there's a lot of different variables at play here, especially like salary and whatnot. If I could make TJ Stats my own full-time job, that would be spectacular. I think that would be amazing, be my own boss and set my own hours. But again, it's not too sophisticated, at least in its current state. But maybe if I go ahead and learn more web development, create my own website, and I guess expand my brand further, it could be something I can do in the future. But again, right now it's strictly a hobby, and maybe hopefully in the future I can work with a team somewhere down the line when I see the opportunity fits.
Yeah, I mean, just from hearing you talk a little bit and obviously reading what you have, I there's no question in my mind, if that's something you want to do, you know, it's going to work out for you. You have some great stuff out there. And Tyler mentioned, right, like, the amount of information that's on your page. I mean, I just appreciate, I think, you know, sometimes when you follow certain people, when they try to fit as much into one tweet as possible, all this information about this guy kind of sometimes can feel overwhelming, and I might skip past it. But the reason why I like your stuff is it doesn't feel as overwhelming. Like, you point to a couple specific things that, you know, that you obviously notice, but you don't go overboard with everything that people need to know. It's just kind of like a quick shot. And you know, I don't have your Patreon, I'm not subscribed, I was just, you know, kind of exploring your Twitter for a little bit, but that's something I just noticed kind of right off the top. So best of luck to you on that.
Yeah. And Thomas, you know, one of the things that I wanted to do here on this show, because I think when discussing all this, folks may go, oh, what am I looking for? And they may go to the page and they may see maybe other things that you've brought up. But I think it's really key that we bring up that pitching report that we discussed. And one particular person, which will lead to another question we discuss here in a little bit when we talk about breakout candidates this year, or not even breakout candidates, but who has broken out and maybe players that have dropped off a little bit, which I'm really intrigued to hear about. One player in particular has been on everyone's trying to get on their fantasy team is Luis Hill. And what I wanted to do, and I apologize if this isn't up close enough, I'm going to go ahead and share on the screen here this particular report that you put together and kind of just helping us walk through sort of how the breakdown works and how this is all put together. Obviously not sharing secrets as to maybe how you gathered some information, but kind of walk us through where did this start? Because this, folks, I'm telling you, is something that you should absolutely be following Thomas about on X about. So
yeah, this, all the data I use here is through the MLB Stats API. MLB has been very kind in making it data public. So I don't have to kind of fight tooth and nail to get it. But yeah, so going through this, the summary here, it's what I post pretty much for every pitcher I found interesting for the night. Usually ones that have really good starts or great starts, or just, I guess, more well-known names. And sometimes I share them for some poor starts, but those are usually for like disaster class outings. I don't really like, unless if there's like very specific,
like an Alec Manoa,
Alec Manoa. Again, but like if they're a bigger name, I'll probably share them a bit more. Yeah, but if they had like a pretty bad start, I might highlight certain things. But I kind of want to stray away from the negativity because I know a lot of people like using negativity as like a push narratives and whatnot.
Absolutely.
But yeah, going back to this graphic here, it kind of started last year with Saris' stuff plus model. Really, I created a similar graphic. I had some inspirations from people on Twitter as well. They had similar, I guess, layouts and numbers and whatnot, but I wanted to kind of make this one my own and kind of have how it's defined. It started with Saris model, and the only thing you really had there was that table at the bottom, the summary stats at the top, I guess their box score, and then their pitch breaks. But then when I went through, I went through a few iterations back in around March, asking people what they liked, like what different graphs or different aspects should I include and whatnot, like even to the finest details of the sizing and even the colors. So I'm like, I want to make sure people want to look at these things, because again, I laid it out for something that I wanted to look at, something nice, quick snapshot. This pitcher did really well today. Why? And then, I can see this or that, like his fastball location was fantastic. But yeah, working through this, the top line, I guess the top of it is just basic information about the pitcher, their name, more biographical information. And then I guess specifically at the start, who they played that day. And then a line, the box score line. So just something nice, quick, easy snapshot. Luis Hill, he had one run in eight innings yesterday, 9 strikeouts, quick and to the point. And then we go into that next level with those three different plots there. So the reason why I have the location split up like that is because, again, certain pitchers have different approach. Like, pitchers typically have different approaches for different batters. As you can see, Hill only throws his slider to right-handed batters. Quick snapshot. Most of the sliders he threw yesterday were right-handed batters, and he located them on the outside edge. Great. Nice, quick, and easy. The reason why I do the ellipses is as you start throwing more and more pitches, it gets really cluttered if I did like kind of individual pitches. But again, something nice, quick, easy snapshot. I typically look at their pitch locations as well. I have a specific option for this graphic to include just the pitch locations, but I don't share them because I find them a bit cluttered. But again, nice, quick, and easy. Maybe a pitcher was locating their pitches not great, like they were only throwing their fastball right in the middle of the zone, and the graphic will quickly show me, oh, that was the case. That's probably why they didn't have the greatest start or whatnot. And then on the far right graphic there, there is the pitch breaks. So that's the pitch movement plot, the short form pitch movement. So that looks at the horizontal break and the induced vertical break of a pitch. So as kind of, if you're just watching a pitch, you can see like that pitch went a lot to the pitcher's arm, the glove side. It's possibly a slider, likely a sweeper, and kind of just explains kind of the movement of a pitch, kind of irrelevant, or I guess away from gravity, I guess, kind of independent of gravity. So it's kind of like how pitches are defined, like fast forcing fastballs have that ride, like they have that backspin to help defy gravity pretty much, or curveballs have topspin. So that in turn with gravity causes it to drop more. So it gets more into the weeds of pitch shapes and pitch modeling, but people like seeing that graphic there specifically to see, oh, how did this, like, what, like, how is this pitcher's fastball differ from someone else's pitch? And specifically in Luis Gil's case, he has a very fast fastball and he also gets a lot of ride on it. Those typically grade out very well in pitch models. And I guess that can lead us to the last table on the graphic here. That's more granular stats for each pitch. So it'll give you stuff like each pitch and the velocities, their movement, even the release height. Stuff like that. And then also metrics relating to them, such as chase rate, which is also known as O swing rate, whiff rate, and even expected WOPA on contact. Very long metric, but that's basically going through the expected damage of a pitch. So, say if you hit a home run, like a very hard hit, like Giancarlo Stanton hit 120 mile an hour home run, that's not good for the pitcher, and that will be defined in this graphic here. But then I guess the biggest one people like to look at is my TJ Stuff Plus metric. So again, very I guess it's a growing thing within the industry. There's a lot of different stuff metrics, and you may not know what it defined, what a Stuff Plus metric really defines, but I have a little note at the bottom of my graphics. Stuff Plus basically is calculating the expected run value of a pitch. So looking at strictly its physical characteristics, independent of its location, to see how this pitch would perform, basically. So using historical data and creating the machine learning model, which I have and used to pump out these numbers, kind of giving us a grade of the pitch. And again, the higher the number, the better, the lower, not as great. But in certain cases, there are some pitches that may grade out really well, but perform poorly, or don't grade out very well and perform very well. Like Luis Gil's changeup has been very fantastic this year, but in Stuff Plus models, it doesn't grade out too well. Because again, changeups, the aspects of a changeup that make them effective lie in deception and more of like usage compared to like something like a fastball. Like it's very well defined that a fastball, a very hard fastball with a lot of ride, would perform very well, as they've done for basically however long a fastball has been thrown. But a changeup, it's not too well defined how their effectiveness. But Luis Gil has been able to utilize a three pitch mix to pretty much near perfection this year. He has been absolutely phenomenal, and he's hopefully he can stay in the lineup, stay in the rotation for the Yankees when Cole is back. But again, he only pitched, I think it was 4 innings last year, so it might be a bit tough for him to stick around. But if even then, he'll be an absolute weapon in the Yankees bullpen.
That was Vinny. You're probably going to say the exact same thing. That was fantastic, and I think a lot of these things people are saying, what do these terms mean? And you did an incredible job there. Go ahead, Vinny.
I have so many questions. I absolutely love this. I saw that Clark Schmidt went down, I think, to the IL. So hopefully Heel doesn't have to come out, right? Cole can just pop back in. You said something and I'm curious because, like, for example, I think I saw somewhere, and it might have been you or someone else, I can't remember off the top of my head, that Ben Brown, who just went for the Cubs yesterday, has the best stuff plus in all of baseball for curveballs. His knuckle curve is one of the best curveballs in all of baseball. And you had said in the stuff plus is the expected run value. I thought you had said regardless of location. Is that correct? Like, so no matter where it is thrown, whether it's the you're looking at the velocity or the IVB, something along those lines, like all of those metrics rather than location. And I'm curious as to, you know, that kind of doesn't seem to click for me, right? Because I'm always taught, you know, location is everything, right? Like if you'd rather put it on the outside corner than down the middle. But I guess it makes sense, right? You just want to look at how good the individual pitch is. I did want to ask one question though that kind of stuck in my mind. You mentioned, right, if Giancarlo Stanton hits a 120 mile an hour bomb off you, right, that's no good. My question to you is, do these kinds of numbers, I guess stuff plus in particular or whatever else, does it take into account the batter at all, like their skill set, right? Because obviously if you give up 120 mile an hour home run to Giancarlo Stanton, that's not as bad as if it was a Sturdy Ruiz, right? Like, is there any sort of two-way street there, or is it all pretty much one way? These are how the pitches grade out on average rather than, well, this pitch didn't do well against this specific hitter. Does that kind of make sense? Is that?
Yeah, it's more of like a kind of influencing the metric or kind of adjusting for the batter themselves. Because definitely there are definitely aspects of a pitch that will make it better against certain batter. And for my model, I don't distinguish between handedness. I don't consider the batter pretty much at all. Just looking at the shapes of the pitch. And that's solely because when I did the training and the testing of the model, the results came to be looking just at the pitch shapes themselves was more predictive than pretty much including anything relating to the batter. Like, for example, their handedness. And again, since you're not playing the same batter all the time, you have to definitely change your approach in certain ways. But again, certain pitchers, say someone like Chris Bassitt, has 8 different pitches to work with. And yeah, the team knows which pitches would be the best to use against a certain batter. Say Giancarlo Stanton, maybe sliders low and away are the way to go against Giancarlo Stanton rather than trying to hit him high and inside because he can swing the absolute hell out of a bat. But again, I don't consider that in my model here. And I think most models don't pretty much consider. I know Saras added a handedness component to his, at least considering that. I know Pitch Profiler has a left-handed stuff plus and a right-handed stuff plus. So again, that's more looking like it'll always say, or like it would pretty much ding any sweepers you're going to throw to the opposite handed hitter. Because again, you don't really want the pitch going, at least a pitch that slow going in towards the batter. Right. For example, like you don't want to throw, again, into a left-handed batter, you don't want to throw a sweeper right down the middle. It's probably not great. You probably don't want to throw a sweeper to anyone right down the middle, but especially not to their opposite-handed hitter.
Right.
But yeah, they're in for a stuff plus metric, kind of keeping it independent of the batter and also the location itself is kind of the formula for it. Because again, it stabilizes quicker and it actually is more predictive season over season, because in some cases some pitchers aren't able to maintain command over a long stretch or even from season to season. There are some, say George Kirby, that can consistently do it over and over, but some one season maybe one pitcher can consistently locate their spots and the next season they're unable to do so. Someone like Alec Manoa was a good example in 2022 to 2023. So again, looking strictly at the pitch shapes, those don't really change too much start to start, unless there is a drastic change in their velocity or they're adding like a new pitch. Definitely there's tinkering, like Tanner Houck. He's had pretty much his slider has been really weird this year. It's started more with some less glove side movement and he's kind of shifting it more to a sweeper. But again, it grades out identical. Like they have the exact same grade from April and the May slider, have completely different shapes, but they grade out the same in my model, and he's been fantastic this season. So again, that I think on the public level, with the public data we have, looking at just the pitch shapes is more simple and I think is more meaningful in smaller samples, for example, my pitch summaries.
I almost wonder, and sorry, and then I'll let you talk, Tyler. I know I've been talking. I almost wonder, too, if when you try to include the hitter or location, like you mentioned earlier, right? Like maybe there's too much. I mean, you didn't like I think you kind of meant this in a way, and correct me if I'm wrong. There may be too much variance, right? Like you mentioned, guys change their approach, or, you know, we don't know how a player is specifically feeling on any given day. So by just grading the stuff and not location or who's up to bat, there is more of a purity behind it because there's less variance, right? You know, the batter could come up and feel really great that day and he had hit a, you know, a pitch that would normally be located really well, you know, et cetera, et cetera. But just real fascinating stuff. I'm just kind of thinking aloud here.
You mentioned a couple names there, like Tanner Houck and some other guys that have been tremendous this year. Not just who's been a breakout candidate, but I would say who's been maybe one or two players thus far this season that you've really enjoyed seeing their breakout season and analyzing their data, maybe has changed a lot of things in order to, you know, be successful. Like, can you name some guys that you feel like this year thus far that you've enjoyed reviewing, basically?
I already mentioned Tanner Houck, so I'll glance over him quickly again. His slider is one of the most valuable pitches in baseball. And he's basically throwing strictly east-west mix. So a lot of slider, sinkers and splitters, and then a slider, kind of just complete opposite ends of the spectrum, and batters just cannot handle it. He's throwing a splitter more often this year. And again, splitters are one of the most valuable pitches in baseball. They tend to grade out very well in models and also return fantastic results. Another pitcher I really enjoy to see is Mackenzie Gore. His fastball has been electric this season. Hasn't had the best results on it, but it has rated out very well in my model. A bit harder this year, more ride. And just he seems to be a very fun pitcher to watch. And his results, specifically with his slider, have been phenomenal this year. He shut down the Braves yesterday. It was a really, really dominating start. Christopher Sanchez of the Phillies. He actually has the highest grades in my model. It kind of disagrees with other models, but kind of, I guess the results are hard to kind of counter with that. He has a very hard sinker and a very hard changeup. He added about 2 to 3 miles an hour on each of them this year, and they have a lot of arm side movement. A bit of a downside on him is his command is a bit spotty, but lately he's been limiting the walks. And again, the results have kind of followed through with that. He's been, I don't know, I've been advocating for him the whole season. Again, he's the number one in my model. I kind of have to do that. And the results coming to fruition are definitely very, very cool to see. Javier Assad, he's having a fantastic season for the Cubs, as you guys likely know. He has a very unique approach. He has a lot of different pitches and he uses them pretty much in a very specific ways. He has pretty much an approach to right-handed hitters and a different approach to left-handed hitters. Kind of mixes in his sinker a bit more to both lefties and righties. But again, he basically is two different pitchers in one when facing those batters. And it's really cool to see, again, something like the Cubs philosophy, focusing more on contact suppression rather than stuff. I guess another pitcher in that same vein is kind of like Tyler Megill. He had his start, I think it was on Tuesday, he threw, it was 7 different pitches and to pretty much great results against the Dodgers. He has that American fork, they're calling it now, or the American spork, the splitter fork that Senga helped him with. But again, Tyler Megill is definitely a pitcher I've been taking a look at. And again, pitchers who just throw a lot of pitchers are pretty fascinating to me. Because definitely a few years ago, I was mostly looking at pitchers that had a really good fastball, a really good slider, and then a changeup. So something like Spencer Strider, or even someone like Jared Jones, kind of following that blueprint. But now seeing pitchers that can throw so many different pitches and just making them work all together with good command and great execution, it seems like a pretty, very effective strategy. Another pitcher in that vein is Cutter Crawford. And then we also have like the three musketeers of the pitch arsenals and Yu Darvish, Seth Lugo, and Bassett. Lugo has been, I think he's leading the AL in ERA this year. He's been absolutely phenomenal, and he throws eight different pitches. It'd be cool if he can figure out how to throw a splitter, because that would be a ninth one, and his whole plot, his whole movement plot would be a colorful mess on my graphics.
What about just, you know, because for time's sakes, I think one, we should talk about maybe one or two guys that you feel like have dropped off, that you felt like maybe had good years last year, that have started to kind of drop off a little bit. Any guys in particular that you can think of off the top of your head?
The one that I've been thinking that was going to drop off a bit more is Aaron Nola. Like, he wasn't too great last year, but it seems like his stuff is steadily declining. He did sign that long extension with the Phillies, but he has been effective this year. But I guess the one knock on him is that he's only really getting great effectiveness out of his curveball, which, again, if it's a really good curveball, you can definitely get the mileage out of there. And he also has good command and a deep arsenal. But again, a pitcher like that with declining velocity is not one you really want to be kind of putting all your eggs in one basket for. But he's been effective this year. I know Brady Singer is having a fantastic year this year, but he included that sinker, or that forcing fastball, sorry. I'm not sure how, I guess, sustainable those results are. He's not getting too much of a strikeout rate. Trigger rate isn't too high, but he does look pretty solid. Again, another pitcher kind of in that same vein is Tyler Anderson. I feel like he's kind of more an extreme version of that. Great results this year, but again, there's nothing really stand out about him. He's walking a bit too many guys. He's not striking anyone out. But yeah, there's definitely a few other ones. Like Justin Verlander, his stuff has seemed to steadily decline last year. He had a really good start yesterday, though. But again, at 41 years old, any like pretty much is just phenomenal to watch him pitch all the time. But again,
I'm so sorry to interrupt you, because I think I don't want to go too much longer here, but I think Justin Verlander is a prime example of kind of this debate of analytics in baseball and how it relates to success of players. Because I watched Verlander yesterday, and watching him make some of the pitches he made was solely based on watching the hitter's reaction to those pitches. Like, I remember one where he threw three curveballs, I think, in a row, that one was a little bit up higher, and then he would drop one in and then drop one in again because he saw the depth and how the hitter was reacting. And I think that's just an interesting point that I wanted to bring up before we get into what I'm really excited to ask you about is your Blue Jays. But I think that is something that is a prime example, right? Is the analytics side and all that, you know, how does that relate? Going into our final discussion here, which I do want to open the floor to you, because we actually have a Blue Jays fan who's on our podcast as well. We call him Bacon, or CB is what he likes to be called. But you're obviously a Blue Jays fan, I'm guessing. Kind of tell us, what are your thoughts on the team this year? I wanted to kind of give you the floor here for a minute just to let you hear kind of your response to that.
The Blue Jays have been a disappointment, I would have to say there. I thought they were going to do much better. They had a fantastic pitching last year. Their rotation was near the tops of the leagues. Their bullpen was solid. But again, the last year, the offense was, I guess, their Achilles heel. They just couldn't get anything done. Blame analytics all you want for them taking Berrios out of that phenomenal playoff performance he was putting on. They couldn't score runs at all. I think they had four runs in three games, whatever it was. I blocked that from my memory because it was an absolute disaster. But again, this year, kind of the same thing. The rotation has been pretty strong. With Manoah going down yesterday, kind of have another hole to fill there. But Berrios has looked very good this year. Kikuchi has been fantastic. Gausman seems to be getting his footing back. And Bassett, he's been effective. Some iffy starts here and there. Being that open, that hole from the fifth starter. Hopefully Ariel Rodriguez is back soon. He can fill that up, because, again, their pitching depth is just not great. And their prospect pool is also not in dire straits as well, with Tiedemann hurt. And again, they don't really have any other pitchers that I'm particularly interested in about. They have Mako, but again, nothing too promising on that end right now. The bullpen is probably their biggest issue right now. Nothing is going right. They had that incredible comeback against the Tigers on the weekend, but it all blew up. Yimi Garcia gave him his first earned runs in like a month and a half. And then Jordan Romano gave him that 3-run home run. But again, the rest of the bullpen has been kind of in shambles. Eric Swanson was just recently sent down after a phenomenal season last year. And again, they've just been a kind of a carousel of pitchers coming back and forth. I'm glad that Chad Green's back in the bullpen. He grades out really well in my model. Again, he hasn't pitched too much this year, but hopefully he can add some much needed reinforcements. And the batting is definitely another issue. Seems to be coming around lately. George Springer in the past week has been a bit better, especially now that he's not in the leadoff role. He was statistically the worst leadoff batter in baseball for pretty sure the whole season. It took them like pretty much 2 months to remove him from that role. But now David Schneider slotted into that role, and it's really, really awesome to see him performing well. I remember a time last year, I think it was about June, David Schneider's dad messaged me on Twitter, and he was like, do you have any numbers on my son? I'm like, hey, David Schneider on the Blue Jays. Like, let me look him up. And he, lo and behold, Schneider was one of the Bison's best hitters. And I was like, damn, this guy's on my radar now. And then he got called up in August, had that ridiculous start, 2 weeks to start his career. And then again, they didn't play him at all in September or even in the playoffs, which was kind of shocked me there, especially with the offensive help that they needed. But now he's doing really, really well. It's awesome to see leading off now. Guerrero seems to, again, finding his footing. He's batting around 400 this month. Not too much power that we're kind of used to seeing, but he's still hitting the ball hard. And it's just hopefully a matter of time before he starts lifting a bit more. But if he can settle in, be a, I guess, 130, 140 WRC plus guy, there's really nothing more you can ask for from him. Bichette also seems to be heating up a bit more after what seemed to be, he was worse than Springer, even though Springer was getting all the hate. Bichette was probably less productive than the least productive batter on the team, other than maybe Kirk, who has unfortunately fallen off. I really didn't think that was going to happen. He has been dreadful. At least his defense has kind of held up. He's one of the best framers in the league. But again, the Jays also are struggling with holding runners on. They've given a lot of steals. And it seems to be more of a function of the pitchers are just slow to get the ball to the catcher rather than the catcher themselves. Because Jansen and Kirk have been productive defensively, and Jansen, along with Schneider, has been really, really good. Hopefully he can stay healthy. He's been kind of a band-aid his whole Blue Jays career. But again, it seems like the prospects of their offense are improving, but in the same time, it's kind of their bullpen is kind of eating into that. But again, like players like Varsho have stepped up big this year, very good defensively. Schneider has been an absolute joy to watch. But again, I feel like Isaiah Kiner-Falefa, I wasn't too big of a fan of the deal he signed in the offseason, but he's been very productive, both on the defensive and also offensive side. He's been an above average hitter, and again, he's one of the better defenders in the league. Again, they definitely do have some holes, like Ernie Clement and Biggio aren't really fulfilling too great of a role there. And like some like Kiermaier, the defense is fantastic. It's just like maybe there is some diminishing returns in that regard. Maybe we can replace Kiermaier, at least the better bat, because right now he's pretty much a black hole in the lineup. We already have Varsho. We don't really need Kiermaier. But in the end, they seem to be a bit better. They just swept the White Sox, which isn't really saying much. But at least it was a nice kind of bounce back from the Detroit Tigers series. And I'm actually going to the game tomorrow against the Pirates. I guess they've already revealed their City Connect jerseys, but that'll be the first game tomorrow. The jerseys, I guess the initial leak didn't really do it justice. I think it looked kind of nice, like a navy blue.
Yeah, they look clean. They do look clean. The hats are clean. Like, they did a great job.
The hats are really nice. Yeah, the hats are really nice. Like, the initial, like, the CN Tower, it doesn't really look like the CN Tower too much, but whatever. But in general, they look really nice, like the dark mode. Hopefully, in person, they look even better when I wash them tomorrow. I was hoping to see either Skeens or Jones at the game, but I missed them by one start, unfortunately. But I get to see Bailey Falter, so that'll be fun.
There's so many guys on that team. I could spend all day kind of breaking some of them down. I mean, I thought for sure it was locked and loaded that Aurelvis Martinez was going to come up earlier in the year, but hasn't happened. I'm a big fan of Dalton Varsho. I've told Tyler this before. Tyler didn't buy in the offseason. I'm happy that he's finally started to figure something out.
He's obviously dog, man.
Yeah, I think Vlad is gonna figure it out. He, like you said, he's hitting the ball really hard, so that, you know, those home runs are coming. David Schneider, just kind of, he's been so fun, like as a just a pure enjoyment, because a lot of the analytics people, and myself included, I'm not huge in analytics, but I like looking at them. David Schneider was not on a lot of people's radars, or even when he came up and had that hot stretch, it was kind of like, oh well, he's just a flash in the pan. It's not going to stick. And he's done really well. So it kind of is weird talking about the parts of the team, because it feels like you guys have so many good quality parts, and, you know, to look and you're last in your division. I don't know if that says something about the division or if it's more just, you know, you guys haven't played up to your standards, but it has been disappointing for you. So still a lot of fun, still a real fun team to watch.
Yep. Well, Thomas, this has been fantastic. You did not need to do this for us. So for you taking the time out of your busy schedule, and especially late night there over on the East Coast, East Coast. Yeah. You know, we truly appreciate the time. You know, can you just really quickly just tell folks, you know, where they can find you? I have your X here at the bottom at TJ Stats. Please go follow him on X. And just anywhere else people can find you.
Yeah. So I have, my at TJ Stats on Twitter. I also have TJ_stats on Patreon. So basically everything I share, at least all the graphics I share on my Twitter page or X page, I guess, are available for people to kind of access on my Patreon. So it's just a bunch of different web apps. You can kind of customize different date ranges, look at different splits. But that's just for pictures. I also have stuff relating to batters, such as like rolling charts, also for pictures as well. A rolling strikeout rate for not just MLB, all the way down from AAA to single A. You can kind of see, oh, how is my favorite prospect doing right now? And double A, and you can see, oh, Noah Schultz has been great since getting promoted. So something like that, in that vein. So again, a bunch of different apps I have on my Twitter page. It's pinned to my profile, kind of going through everything there that's available. Minor league Statcast data, again, major league Statcast data, of course, like different batter cards, different graphics to hopefully you find interesting. Maybe it gives you an edge in fantasy, or if you want to use it for anything you want, really. I just find them really cool to look at, kind of gets a nice glance at the data, quick and easy, and it helps you go dig deeper at certain players you want to take a look at. You can also find me on Medium. I've wrote a few articles. So if you want to learn more about, pitch modeling, I have two articles covering my TJ Stuff Plus model. I also have articles covering my decision value model on other baseball analytics mumbo jumbo that maybe if you're interested in and programming side stuff that I'm a huge nerd. I love looking at all this stuff, parsing through the numbers, and if you're interested in any of the work I need or have any questions, just message me. Twitter is probably the easiest place to reach out. I'm very happy to help with anything, and it was a fantastic to be on the show tonight, and thank you for the invitation.
Absolutely.
I will certainly be looking for your articles on the programming side of it, because I think that's my favorite part of doing this. And I do have to ask, Tyler, cut it out of the outline, but do you have a favorite Pokemon? I saw you're a big Pokemon fan. Do you have a favorite Pokemon or like a couple?
I actually got one of my friends got this thing for me. I'm not sure if you can see it.
Oh, that's sweet.
Oh, that's sick.
What's you inside? See it? It's hard to see. It's a Crobat. Actually, maybe it's easier if the battery does this thing work? Does that thing work there?
Oh yeah. See it a
bit better?
Oh, that's sick. Yeah.
It's Crobat. Yeah. So that's it's like in glass. So that's really cool. Yeah. So Crobat is my favorite Pokemon. My favorite Pokemon game is Heart Gold and Soul Silver. I also am a big fan of the Generation 5 games, and hopefully those get a remake soon. I'm definitely a huge Pokemon fan. Maybe more than baseball, but I'm not going to be sharing too much Pokemon on my. I'm going to be sharing too much Pokemon on my page. So,
people might start unfollowing at that point if you start posting stats on Pokemon and
I think there's a nice overlap there. I know I think Kyle at Pictureless, Kyle Bland, he's also a pretty big Pokemon fan. He's actually made, I think it was more for hockey, he made kind of an app where you can look at a player's stats and like relate them to a Pokemon stat.
That's
so
cool.
Like their goal scoring is their attack and whatnot, and it was really cool to see. I think there's a good overlap. I don't think I'll lose too many followers.
No, I was just kidding.
Maybe I'll gain some. Who knows? But yeah, I've definitely had a few people message me like, oh wow, you like Pokemon too. Cool. But yeah, it's just fun. I don't know. I haven't played too much lately, but I'm always interested in a Pokemon conversation here and there.
Well, this was awesome. And seriously, Thomas, thank you again for all the time that you spent with us, almost coming up here on an hour here on the Big Fly Pod. We really appreciate it. We learned a lot. That it's truly remarkable what the data can say and how much work that goes into it. So thank you again for joining us. And to everyone that tuned in, thank you so much again for listening to another edition of the Big Fly Pod. And we'll talk to you again here soon.